This is Jay Sekulow. The focus is real.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, there's been so much news going on the last couple weeks, it's hard to break in with anything, so that's why we're doing this broadcast. If you're watching us during Thanksgiving weeks, which some of you will be, this was big news last week, and that is the Trump administration will stop classifying Israeli West Bank settlements as a violation of international law, a step that some are raising concerns with. Who are those some? Ilhan Omar saying Israeli settlements violate international law, decades of U.S. foreign policy, and the human rights of Palestinians. All who believe in the possibility of peace must speak up. That she's not happy about this. In the end, we will not remember the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Rashid Tlaib. These are shocking, by the way. Israeli settlements in the West Bank violate international law, no matter what this corrupt and immoral Trump regime says. Yeah, it's a lawless king-like dictator. Say, it doesn't change the fact. So that's Ilhan Omar. No great shock there. Bernie Sanders. Israeli settlements in occupied territory are illegal. This is clear from international law and multiple UN resolutions. Once again, Mr. Trump is isolating the United States and undermining diplomacy by pandering to his extremist base. Let me first go to Skip Ash. Define what these settlements are and where they're located.
The settlements are within what's the territory we know as the West Bank, which was the territory that the Israelis did not conquer during the 1948-49 war. It was occupied by the Jordanians. There are settlements there that are Jewish settlements. They're there on key pieces of terrain, and they're there for the security of Israel. So, and they're becoming quite extensive, but they're also lawful. I want to encourage that when we get into the lawfulness, I want to make sure that people understand that they are absolutely lawful. They have been encouraged since the mandate for Palestine in the early 1920s, and they are definitely lawful, irrespective of what some of our politicians are saying and irrespective of what the international bodies like the United Nations General Assembly is saying.
Here's what Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said about this very issue.
The Trump administration is reversing the Obama administration's approach towards Israeli settlements. U.S. public statements on settlement activities in the West Bank have been inconsistent over decades.
And that is because they were classified as illegal under the Obama administration. This is a huge development. By the way, when you're thinking settlements, let me tell you what this isn't. This isn't like small little areas. Some of these are highly developed towns that have universities in them. I mean, these are big areas of the country. I mean, Israel is a small country, but it's big areas. It's a big zone. And this is a big announcement, Jordan.
It is. And it's a formal construction. It's not in the sense of, oh, I put, my flag down and, I got a tent here. That may have been how they started in the 1940s, but they have developed into fully functioning towns, almost to the point of where you would say somewhere like cities.
Yes.
If you were looking back and on a distance, you see these what has been created there. And as Skip said, that's because this has been something encouraged by the government of Israel. And so for the people, they've been encouraged to go. They're encouraged to do this and to make this their home, because everyone knew that at some point, if there's any kind of peace talks, they'll have to negotiate this land. And some of this land, Israel believes, is Israel's, and even though the mandates and the UN and this. So I think from the U.S. taking a step back and saying, we're not going to see this as illegal, have a negotiation over it.
All right, so we've got less than a minute here. We're going to take your calls on this. 800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. This is a big development. There's been a lot of litigation on this issue. There's been UN resolutions on this issue. Than, very quickly, were you surprised that this move is happening now? I mean, it's been very consistent with, you look at the Golan Heights Declaration.
Yeah, not surprised, Jay, just because of the long track record that this administration already has on these issues. Look, it follows on the heels of moving the embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing Golan Heights, and then a whole slew of actions at the United Nations, Jay, which we can get into. Jay, they haven't actually read what the administration did, because like Jordan said, they didn't conclude the legality. They specifically said they were going to leave that to the parties involved. So those members of Congress, Jay, they're just reacting.
No, that's 100% correct. So again, let me just tell you, this is a big, big development. We're going to get a lot more on this. We're going to give you an update on the ICC matter. A lot going on. Give us a call, 800-684-3110. How important is the issue of Israel to you? And how about our U.S. military? 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back. So the Trump administration will now recognize Israel's West Bank settlements as not violations of international law, not occupied territory. Again, Skip, I think it's important to reiterate, and I've got a question for Harry and Wes here. Important to reiterate what we're talking about. Do we have a map of Israel? I think we do. Let's get the map of Israel up so we'll eventually show this to you. Of where Jordan, this was territory that was one time Jordan's. But give a little bit of the history of these areas.
Well, if we begin properly, we'll begin back after World War I in the time of the Mandate for Palestine. The Mandate for Palestine was created for the very purpose of creating a homeland for the Jewish people. And the British were the mandatory. They were the power in charge. And by themselves, they divided the mandate into two parts. The one we call Palestine and the one that became Jordan. So right off the bat, the British took 78% of it and gave it to the Arabs. So right off the bat, we need to recognize that the Arabs have a state already out of Palestine, and it's called Jordan. Then in 1948, the British withdrew, and that territory that was left between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean became the state of Israel. There was a civil war that went on between the Arabs and the Israelis, and the Israelis won. But they were not able to occupy every bit. There was a part occupied by the Jordanian army, which was called the West Bank, and there was a part occupied by the Egyptian army, which was called the Gaza Strip. In 1967, there was a war between the Arabs and the Israelis, and the Israelis won those two parts back, plus the Golan Heights and the Sinai Desert. And it's at that point in time that the Israelis really claimed the customary international law privilege of uti possidetis juris, which says the state that emerges when a colony or a mandate ceases to exist gets all the territory of that colony or mandate at the time. And Israel was the only nation to emerge in 1948. So every bit of land in the territory between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea became Israel. So they are now settling in territory over which they have sovereign rights. And even though they have recognized Palestinian claims and are willing to give up some of that for a Palestinian state, they actually own every bit of it right now, and no international organization like the UN General Assembly or anything else can take that away from them. They have the sovereign right over that land.
We have the picture, a map up right now that you could see exactly the area that we're talking about here and what it involves. So this is very, very good. We also have a call coming in. apparently from Israel. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110.
Yeah, Lou is calling from Israel. Live 1. Lou, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
How are you, Jay?
Good.
So, actually, your previous commentator, and I came in the middle of that conversation, said exactly what I was going to say about the so-called West Bank, which we call Judea and Samaria or Yehuda and Shomron. And that is, if you look at a map from the 20s, 30s, 40s, that's what it's called, is Judea and Samaria. And so that's the real name. And so, in other words, they have no – Jordan was the one that illegally occupied for 19 years between 1948 and 1967. They are the ones. And by the way, Jake, correct me if I'm right, wrong on, or right on this, I think Pakistan was the only country that recognized their so-called sovereignty over the West Bank, what they called the West
Bank. Yeah, so the interesting aspect of this is, and if you look at it historically, you're right. This area, but this is, I want to put that map up. We're talking about a big swath of land, and we're talking about when we call these settlements. It's a lot more than a settlement. Okay, these are functioning cities. But I think, Harry, if you look at it from a policy perspective, it makes perfect sense in light of the Golan Declaration that came back in April or May of last year, where the president with Benjamin Netanyahu met and the United States issued the declaration saying the Golan Heights, which again, one time was controlled by Syria, was in fact Israel's sovereign land, which is unbelievably important for national security. It makes sense from a policy standpoint that this now would be this a new approachment as it relates to Israeli, what were called settlements.
You're precisely correct. And so I think if you look at this from a historical perspective, Judea and Samaria have been linked to Jewish history for thousands of years. That's number one. Number two, if you look at the mandate creating the modern state of Israel, Judea and Samaria have been linked to the state of Israel. And so U.S. policy, the U.S. policy change announced by Secretary Pompeo is consistent with U.S. opposition to BDS and U.S. continual strong support for Israel. As Than correctly points out, moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing Israel's control of the Golan Heights. And it's very, very important with respect to the timing of Pompeo's declaration, because it takes place shortly after the European community decided to mislabel Israeli goods from the settlement, grounded in the mistaken notion that goods produced in the so-called settlement areas are occupied territories. This is pure political theater on the part of the Europeans, and the U.S. Policy announcement by Secretary Pompeo basically is a pointed response, in my opinion, to that mistaken notion by the Europeans.
Yeah, and Wes, it's no shock that Ilhan Omar made her statement, Israeli settlements violate the international law, decades of U.S. foreign policy and human rights of Palestinians.
Oh, yeah. What this old policy, which thankfully the Trump administration is reversing, what it does is it penalizes Israel on an issue that does not take into account the history of the region, the geographical realities of the region, and the multiple issues that the Palestinians consistently refuse to address. You know, this is simply a good thing that has happened. The Palestinians have a history in all of my lifetime that I can remember of refusing to take yes for an answer. Every time Israel negotiates in good faith, the Palestinians respond with unfaith and violence.
Jordan,
but this land historically belongs to Israel.
No question about that. What's your sense?
I think it's a big statement coming from the State Department. I mean, it's being a little bit overshadowed in the week that it came out because of these. That was during the second week of the impeachment hearings. But at the same time, I think long term, these are the big issue moments that the president is going to speak to on the campaign trail about, you know, decisions he's made, State Department has made, big shifts. I guarantee you, by the way, this one inside the State Department, I bet a lot of these people wish they would have waited to try and do their impeachment, because I bet these State Department officials are going nuts over this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they are. I was going to ask that to Than. So, Than, reaction in Washington, we saw Bernie Sanders. Let me read that again. No great shock on that one. Israeli settlements in occupied territory are illegal. This is clear from international law and multiple UN resolutions. Once again, Mr. Trump is isolating the U.S. and undermining diplomacy by pandering to his extremist base. By the way, extremist base, it's like the most people that support Israel support this.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I would say, Jay, is those voices are not friends of Israel. So they might be emanating out of Washington, D.C., but they're not voices we should pay particular attention to on these matters of policy. Look, but I would just underscore something that that Harry talked about. The voice of the United States in these issues in the international community is so significant, Jay, and it shouldn't be lost on people. The timing of the Obama administration's reversal on this, it was in December of 2016, right as they were leaving. That seems to be a habit in this area. Jay, they did the same thing at the United Nations Security Council. Basically, what it left was it left the Trump administration with a laundry list of issues in the Middle East that then it had to be rolled back. You know, so here we are 3 years into the administration, and you can go down the list of six or eight major policy items that have had to be rolled back. I think Jordan's correct that it might be lost in the news cycle a little bit, but the bottom line is, Jay, this is the right policy to make. So, of course, putting it off for political reasons would not be the right thing to do. The voice of the United States in this region, it's the most important one.
Yeah, I'm going to go through on the next segment of the broadcast the three major things that have been done on the Israel front that have happened in the last 3 years, and these are very, very significant. But as we get ready to go into a break, let me encourage you to do something. We're in our matching challenge weeks, and we're right near the end. We're getting near the end of it, and we've got an office in Jerusalem, a full functioning office. We got lawyers there. We have government affairs experts as part of that office. That team is working on the ICC case because it involves international law, all of that because of your support of the American Center for Law and Justice. As we get ready to hit this, our goals for the Matching Challenge campaign, let me encourage you to do something as well, and that is go over to aclj.org. Jordan's going to give you the details here of how this works, but I just want to implore you that if you, as we talk about these issues, talking about Israel here, the American Center for Law and Justice has a full functioning office in Jerusalem. We talk about the issues in the UN. We've got a full functioning office in Strasbourg, France, that's enabling us, because of our NGO status, to go to the International Criminal Court. All that because of your support for the work of the ACLJ.
Go to aclj.org right now. We've got a matching challenge. Every donation that comes through, we have a group of donors say, for every donation that comes through, we're going to match that donation. You've got to make that initial donation, and then to trigger that match. You can double the impact of your donation by going to aclj.org. When you go to the homepage, you'll see matching challenge right at the top. You'll also, I think, if you go to the homepage this week, you'll really get to see all of the different work and issues that we're working on as well. And again, a lot of things got taken over by the impeachment, the hearings, and all of that. But let's reset the stage now. aclj.org. Be part of the matching challenge and check out all the work that we're doing as well. Go there.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're talking about something that got really overlooked in the news, and that was the issue on the recognition that the so-called settlements were, in fact, Israel sovereign property that was made by the Trump administration. Let me play for you what Mike Pompeo said, the Secretary of State, announcing this. Again, it got overshadowed by the impeachment inquiry, but this is a big development, and it follows two other issues that are very significant on the Israel front. I want to talk about those as well. Let's go ahead and play what Mike Pompeo had to say.
The conclusion that we will no longer recognize Israeli settlements as per se inconsistent with international law is based on the unique facts, history, and circumstances presented by the establishment of civilian settlements in the West Bank. Our decision today does not prejudice or decide legal conclusions regarding situations in any other parts of the world.
All right. So that's an interesting statement because it leaves open the negotiation issue. But let me go to what's happened. First, it was the president recognizing that Jerusalem was, in fact, the eternal capital of the Jewish state of Israel. Major announcement on the Jerusalem Declaration took place in 2018. 2019, this year, earlier in the year, around the end of April, what happens? Benjamin Netanyahu's over in the United States. Golan Heights Declaration, recognizing that the Golan Heights are now part of Israel's sovereignty. And Skip, let's talk about that. Strategically, that was very important because of the role the Golan plays.
Absolutely. The state of Syria attacked Israel three times from there in the War for Independence in 1967 and in 1973. At that point in Israel, the state of Israel is about 6 miles wide between the Golan Heights and Lebanon. It is absolutely critical that the Israelis control that. There is a rule in international law that you cannot gain territory through aggressive war. Israel didn't gain this territory through aggressive war. They gained this territory in a defensive war to stop the aggression of Syria, and Syria now is paying a price for its aggression by losing its territory. This was absolutely the right decision on the part of our government, and it's absolutely essential for the defense of Israel.
Wes, it seems to me that there's a consistent Trump doctrine here that's developing with regard to Israel. You see it in the Jerusalem Declaration, right, with the move to the recognizing the capital as Jerusalem. You see it with the Golan Declaration. You now see it with the settlement issue.
Yeah, and moving our embassy to Jerusalem, which was a big deal. Presidents have promised that for multiple administrations.
Law's been on the book for 20 years,
but
never enforced.
But would not do it. You know, Skip's exactly right. The Golan Heights are so strategically important to Israel. Routinely, over the years, Israel's enemies have used the Golan Heights to shell civilians from that region. And so Israel's security is at stake. As I've said before on this broadcast, Israel is never the aggressor in any war they've had to fight. They have fought for their survival. And part of the Palestinian makeup in that area of the world, it includes people who do not want peace with Israel, Jay. They want the destruction, the annihilation of the state of Israel, groups like Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And so they face enemies every day, and their existence is at stake. And I applaud the administration for what they're doing.
I want to play the reporter question to Mike Pompeo about this and get everybody's reaction. This thing is important. Listen to number 28.
I'm wondering if you are at all concerned that this position, that's reversal of the previous administration's position, is going to increase the isolation of the U.S., particularly in the U.N. and around the world, because pretty much everyone else has held the position that if not illegal, they are at least inconsistent with international law.
Well, I must say, sadly, there hasn't been much support for Israel in the years leading up to this. It's hard to imagine more isolation, unfortunately, at the UN as a result of this decision.
So I think that capsulizes exactly what the problem is. The UN has a history, Jordan, of anti-Israel animus. I'm going to go to Than on that as well.
Oh, history, yes. I mean, this is the number one country condemned by the UN General Assembly is the Jewish state of Israel. So it is Israel that is number one. It's not any dictatorships, or it's not the Assad regime in Syria. It wasn't Saddam Hussein's Iraq. It is Israel that is number one, the most condemned nation in the world. By the United Nations is the state of Israel.
All right. Now, Fan, from your perspective in dealing with the UN, the fact that the president made this move also is significant, especially now. It's not going to be popular in the UN, no question about it, but it's the right move for our ally.
The fact that it's not popular at the United Nations and the fact that it isolates us from those in the United Nations is a badge of honor on this issue, not a problem, Jay. Look, Jordan's correct. There have been more censures out of the United Nations against the state of Israel than, get this, all of the other nations of the world combined. It's not Iran. It's not Syria. It's not Cuba. It's not any of the list of others. It's the state of Israel. And, Jay, I would actually add the United Nations to your list of three major moves that this administration has made on Israel, because when anything that the United Nations does that has any sort of teeth or enforcement in it is passed, it ultimately has to go through the United Nations Security Council to be approved. And the United States has veto power on that council. At the end of the Obama administration, as you know, Jay, the United States decided to stop using that veto power and refused to stand by its ally Israel. The Trump administration, Jay, has reinstated that veto. So the United Nations, in my view, is just as significant as those three items you mentioned. It's maybe the most significant international place where the United States is once again standing by its ally.
Skip, how do you see this lining up as it relates to resolutions of a peace process? Of course, peace process is in pretty bad shape right now.
Well, I think, you know, the Palestinians have been given multiple opportunities to get 95 up to 98% of what they asked for, and they declined to accept that deal. So as somebody said earlier, they don't know how to take yes for an answer. So I think what we're doing now is saying, okay, if you want to sit on your hands and you want to complain, we're not going to pander to you anymore. If you want to get serious about making the compromises that are necessary to get your state, then the Israelis are ready to listen, and we're, as the United States, are ready to support that. But if you're going to play games, we're tired of playing games. We're going to correct this historical anomaly that afflicts only Israel, and you can sit there and complain to your heart's content. If you want a deal, the Israelis are ready. We're ready. If you don't want a deal, that's fine, too.
Right. Cambria is calling from Utah on line one. Cambria, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air. Hi, Cambria.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A question and then a comment. First, great. I want to thank you for your book on Israel.
Great.
And encourage others to read it because it highlights so eloquently the right for Israel to their land. And I think that's be fundamental for people to understand this whole conversation. The question is regarding the ICC.
Yes.
Is there a way that we can encourage our allies to pull away from the ICC, therefore taking the leverage out?
Well, look, two-thirds, it's an interesting aspect, Skip. This is something we're talking about in our ICC argument, and that is, while two-thirds of the world's countries are members, it only represents one-third of the countries of the world's population.
Oh, that's it. That's exactly right. In this sense, we're equating Liechtenstein and San Marino and Luxembourg and those little nations with the People's Republic of China and India and the United States, these huge population areas. The problem is they're not going to withdraw because it's politically correct to be there, and we're never going to get our European allies out of there.
No, and what we're going to do, though, is we're going to be there December 4th, 5th, and 6th. In the next half hour of the broadcast, we're going to be talking about exactly that. We're going to be talking about the ICC, so we've got a lot more ahead. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. You could do that at aclj.org, especially now in the last days of these matching challenge months. ACLJ.org, ACLJ.org, and we're going to be at the ICC. I encourage you to pray for our team. We've got about eight lawyers. They're going to head over to The Hague, December 4th, 5th, and 6th. I'm going to broadcast from The Hague. Jordan will be, we're going to figure out how to do that. We're going to figure out how to get that done for everybody. That'll be great. All right, we'll talk to you coming up.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Yeah.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
We have got a lot that we've been talking about. There's been impeachment issues. We've had cases at the Supreme Court. You know what we've been dealing with. Let me tell you what else is going on. December 4th, 5th, and 6th, we are at the, I call it the Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court of the International Criminal Court. It's the appeals chamber of the ICC in the matter of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan, where the Office of the Prosecutor is trying to get jurisdiction over the Taliban, Afghan National Security Forces, and the United States military for alleged war crimes. This is a huge, huge case. I want to first go to Jordan, then I'm going to go to everybody here very quickly. We're going to get into the details of the case in the moment. But Jordan, you studied this. You got an LLM in this from Georgetown. This is probably the biggest case they've taken on this jurisdictional issue ever.
It's the ultimate move for them to consider if they're going to try and assume this jurisdiction over on their own over the United States to this backhanded approach that violates international law, international norms, that violates their own statute, really. And so to try and backdoor access to the United States and thus basically be able to assert jurisdiction over anyone whenever they want to, because if you could do it to a party who has not signed, you could do it to any party that hasn't signed. But taking on the U.S., the most powerful, the strongest military in the world, and one of the more active in the world as well, this would be the ultimate move. Now, the lower court, the ICC, was unwilling to go there, told the prosecutor no.
Right.
You can't.
But the prosecutor's appealed.
But this appeal was accepted by their highest chamber, like their Supreme Court. So just the acceptance there alone is concerning that they're even considering this appeal. They didn't have to go there either.
Skip, what do you think about the significance of this? For our donors, for the members of the ACLJ, what does this mean?
Well, it's significant that you're going to be there giving the United States view for the first time. We are there saying that the treaty as it now stands in violation of customary international law, and that's the law that binds the United States, and the United States is reacting because this court is exercising what they call exorbitant jurisdiction. It's exercising jurisdiction that violates the law. They keep talking about the rule of law, but they're in the very act of talking about it, they're violating the rule of law. The United States is pushing back, and I think this is going to be a situation where the court finally is going to have to come to reality with respect to the fact that it is not a universal court. It cannot just try whomever it wishes, and they need to make some changes in order to remain a viable court in the international scene.
What's happened significant when you see this case?
Very, very significant. You know, recently the president pardoned two U.S. soldiers and restored the rank of another one who were actually unfairly accused of murder. Think what it would be like, Jay, if these soldiers were under the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court.
Horrific is what I think. Harry?
Well, essentially, global elites want national policy to be subordinated to the global elites themselves who dislike the common folk who live in what is called flyover country. The ICC is an instrument of the global elites who want to set policy, and they want to take policy decisions away from elected representatives. We have an internationally recognized justice system in the United States. We are prepared to administer justice if U.S. servicemen engage in misconduct. We do not need an international body to oversee us.
I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington. Obviously, this implicates that there's been a lot of administrations have said no to this treaty, not just for Republicans.
Question. Yep. No question about it, Jay. And I would just add a layer to the jurisdiction point. Look, there's no two ways about it. The United States military is a tremendous force for good in the world, but it's very popular around the globe to criticize them. We ask them to put themselves in harm's way for us, Jay. Now, when they're attacked in an international body like this, it's our duty to defend them. That's a second reason why it's very important for us to be there.
It's a unique time to support the work of the ACLJ because we are in this position to be there representing this position for saying this is the U.S. We've been the position, and it's not just filing like an amicus, but actually being the main lead on it. You can support that work and the defense of those who usually are the ones defending us at ACLJ.org. Be part of our matching challenge. Whatever you donate, effectively doubled. So we've got the group of donors say every donation that comes through this month, we're going to match that donation. But you've got to make the initial donation for that match to trigger. So you go to ACLJ.org and donate today. Double the impact of your donation. And you can kind of get a sense, too, at our website of all the different issues, all the different work that we're engaged in at ACLJ.org. But we encourage you to support us. Important month for us at ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Folks, as we have called it, the biggest international case, one of the biggest cases we've ever dealt with in the ACLJ and our European affiliate, the European Center for Law and Justice, the biggest case we've ever dealt with because it involves the protecting the interests of U.S. armed forces, U.S. intelligence agents and agencies. We're talking about all branches, all intelligence agencies. This relates to Afghanistan. We've got a couple questions coming on Facebook and Periscope. We're also taking your phone calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. And if you're on Facebook and Periscope, I encourage you to share this broadcast right now with your friends and family because I guarantee you they don't know about this yet. They don't know about this move yet by the ICC to try and get jurisdiction over U.S. troops. That's the ultimate goal here, to even investigate U.S. troops. I mean, that is the question here. Do they even have the jurisdiction to investigate U.S. troops? Can their prosecutor do that? And if so, can they then bring charges? And if they can bring charges, do warrants issue? And you're traveling abroad and there's a warrant against you. Are you picked up and then tried by the ICC because you happen to be one of those servicemen and women? Even though the U.S. has never agreed to sign on to what's called the Rome Statute. We have never joined the International Criminal Court. We are not a state party. But in this case, we have been asked to do that. We'll be at the ICC in robes. If we play the video, we will for you later in the week of what it looks like at the International Criminal Court in the specific robes you have to wear when you appear before this international tribunal. The U.S. government will not do it because by showing up, oftentimes courts say, if you show up, you are, in a sense, acceding to the jurisdiction of a court, even if you've said in the past it doesn't have jurisdiction. So the U.S. government won't do it. We have to. We get in there and fight for the U.S. position. So we are actually directly, your financial support is directly going to the defense of U.S. troops and the U.S., the interest of the U.S. military and of our intelligence agencies as well. It's unique that we wouldn't be like partnering with the U.S. government or siding with the U.S. military, but that we are actually in a, representing the position of the U.S. military at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And if you donate this month, the month of November, your donations are doubled. And what a time where we need resources, folks, because we've got to put together a big team to get to The Hague in less than a month to get there to prepare to present this case. December 4th, 5th, and 6th. So we're already working on it behind the scenes. There's a lot of details and specifics we could get into. We kind of wanted to give you an overview today. We need your financial support. It happened to fall. We got this on October 24th, this order from the court, and we wanted to make sure that the order we got was exactly what we thought. It was actually an order to appear before the court, not just to issue a written submission before the court. And it absolutely was, and it was because we had this unique position of actually defending. The court says it in no uncertain terms. That you have indicated an intention to present a different perspective. What does that tell you? Everyone else there is going to be with the perspective of go after the U.S. troops, go after the brave men and women who serve our country, not us at the ACLJ and the ECLJ. We are going to defend the brave men and women who risk their lives to serve our country and voluntarily choose to do that. And let me go to the phones and answer some of the questions, but remember to donate today, and you'll be directly supporting the work in this case and double the impact of your donation all in the entire month of November. Whatever you donate is effectively doubled. So if you donate $25 right now to the ACLJ, a donor is going to match every donation. Donors are going to match. A group of donors will match every donation that comes in. So if you donate $25, that's effectively like donating $50. Go to ACLJ.org right now and be part of our matching challenge. Let me go to Dave, who is a veteran in Salem, Oregon. Dave, thank you for your service to our country. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a question. When I joined the service back during the Vietnam era, I took an oath to, and my commander-in-chief at that time was the president of the United States. I'm really trying to control my anger because I remember coming back and having things thrown at me and being called a baby killer. And I don't see how our brothers and sisters, we would not have a military if we have to start answering to somebody other than the president of our country.
But of course, and you've got military, we have military courts, Dave. I mean, you take your oath to your commander in chief who issues those orders. We have Congress who approved, war powers resolutions. We have military courts that handle court martials, Dave. And I understand your anger as a Vietnam veteran, someone who was not respected when they should have been when they came back to our country for the service, for the honor, for serving their country. And in that situation, many who didn't have a choice because of the draft were not choosing to voluntarily necessarily serve, were drafted into service, did so honorably, and were not treated so by their own country when they returned. But you ask, how does this happen? Well, there's a statute, a treaty. The International Criminal Court is not like part of the UN. It's, again, sometimes it refers things from like the UN Security Council and things like that, but it is separate. It is a treaty set up on its own. It's called the Rome Statute. It kind of went into effect in 1997 when there were enough signatories to then start the court. And Than, I think we don't have the book on it in front of me. It's about this big. It's a lot different than establishing like how you establish our court system in the United States or our federal courts. Again, you've got about 2/3 of the countries of the world are signed onto it, but the major superpowers have not. So the court has never really been able to flex its full muscles. So it's looking at other ways to get at those countries. And target number one, of course, is the U.S. military.
And they're sure trying to flex those muscles, Jordan. I mean, the important thing for Dave is that the United States has not ratified it. I mean, Bill Clinton wanted to. He initially started the process of signing it. It was never ratified. And in 2002, George W. Bush removed the United States from that process. So we are not subject to the jurisdiction. And Jordan, jurisdiction is a word we're going to use a lot when talking about this issue. And make no mistake about it, jurisdiction over the United States is always what these international bodies are ultimately after. The issue of the day might change, Jordan, but ultimately they're trying to find jurisdiction over the United States, and in this case, United States forces. But let me just say this to Dave and to our other listeners. Even if you set that issue aside, Jordan, which you can't really do, but even if you set jurisdiction aside, this process that the International Criminal Court engages in, Jordan, it's intended for terrorists. It's intended for the likes of the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram. It is being used against U.S. service members. So, number one, the United States is not under the jurisdiction of the ICC. And, Jordan, number two, Dave and other members who have served in our armed forces ought to be offended that a process reserved for terrorists is now being aimed at the members of our military.
Let me tell you some of the people who have been indicted by the ICC. Omar Bashir, who was the former president of Sudan, finally overthrown by his own people, though the military took over in Sudan recently. Not a great situation there. He has been faced an international indictment. Remember Joseph Kony? There was a lot of talk about him and the Lord's Resistance Army, and I remember that happening a lot in the Christian community and churches, this talk about finding Joseph Kony, that he's been, again, there's been an international criminal court indictment against him. The Kenyan president for unrest there, who's President Kenyatta. There was an ICC warrant for Muammar Gaddafi. There have only been, this will only be the ninth situation, kind of as they like to call it, the ninth, specific situation that the ICC has even looked into. I mean, it's very unique. Again, it's not like they are running through things very quickly. This is the ninth. So the previous investigations, just to give you kind of like a quick overview of what the ICC's top level, like their Supreme Court has looked at, is abuses within the Democratic Republic of Congo. And then there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 named individuals there that they wanted to prosecute. Some they were able to, some that were acquitted, some that they never were able to find or arrest. In Uganda, you had, about 5. Only one they were able to even begin trial on. A Central African Republic, there were, 5 situations there. Only a few have been handled. Then, the atrocities in Darfur and Sudan. The leader there, Omar Bashir, but now he's been overthrown by the Sudanese government, and he's on trial in Sudan. Kenya, Libya, Ivory Coast, and Mali. And the next up is the situation in Afghanistan. That is it. So that's how historic this is, even for the purposes of the International Criminal Court. When we come back, we'll take all your phone calls. I want to thank Cambria and Mary for holding on. We'll get to your calls when we get back. But let me remind you, we're going to be the oral argument that we're involved in is at The Hague in the Netherlands. We need your support financially. This is, and it happens to be, sometimes the timing is perfect because this happens to be a matching challenge month with whatever you donate. In the month of November is effectively doubled because we have a group of donors who will match every donation to the ACLJ. Donate today to the ACLJ at aclj.org. Defend our troops. Defend the brave men and women who defend us. aclj.org. Donate today.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So we've got a lot of questions that are similar coming in. I think what Steven on Facebook wrote is perfect, which is, this is absolutely unacceptable. But I want to go to Cambria's call from Utah, because I think it kind of sets the stage. It also answers Kathy on Facebook's question as well. Cambria, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Thank you for hanging on. We're going to get you a book as well, signed, the next Red Wave, signed to you. So we'll get your address to get that book to you. But go ahead. You have a really good question about this case.
Thank you very much. I think you answered part of my question, so I modified it, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
How many allies do we have in the ICC? And secondly, what is to keep them from retaliating with our, I know, against our allies?
So we don't, there's no allies at the ICC. There are states that are members. And if they're members, they have agreed to the terms of what the International Criminal Court and the Rome Statute means. They have given some of their sovereignty over, their judicial sovereignty over, when it comes to matters of war and then the prosecution of potential war crimes. Now, countries like the UK and Canada and others think, hey, we're never going to have to be that signed on to this. This will never apply to us because we have complementary court systems that can deal with this. And that should be the case with the U.S., even though we're not a member. But the ICC is quickly learning that if they go with that idea, that, oh, well, since they have a court system, we can't ever prosecute it, then all they're ever going to be doing is prosecuting African warlords and kids who work for those African warlords. So to broaden out their jurisdiction, they've got these whole other arguments that have usually worked before and held a lot of weight, they're testing. They're testing through the prosecutor who lost this case, Cambria, at the lower court in the ICC. They said no, it would be against the interest of justice to do this. But the appeals chamber, which is the Supreme Court inside the ICC, said we're going to take the case. And that's when our alarm bells went off. Why is the appeals chamber, their highest court, saying they want to hear this? And the chief, the president of the ICC's appeals chamber, so they're kind of like their chief justice, had to recuse himself because he's already been very clear on this matter. He thinks the ICC would have jurisdiction. So he had to recuse himself from this case. So as Kathy wrote in, how would this be enforced? And it would be enforced through, you look at a map, and if you, we'll pull it up for tomorrow, of all the countries that have ratified the International Criminal Court and that are members of the ICC. And it's most of the world. So it'd be enforced by, if you're traveling into one of those countries. So when you're in another country, you are subject to their jurisdiction. And if a warrant issues from a country than that you're in this case, an international organization, and you're traveling in Brazil because they're a member, or one of the Caribbean countries that's a member, or Mexico or Canada that's a member, and a warrant issues for you from the ICC, that country under the Rome Statute is supposed to then apprehend you and send you over to The Hague. You're not automatically found guilty, but for trial. I mean, they're supposed to do that. That is what the ICC's goal here is, to ultimately get that kind of jurisdiction over U.S. military troops and intelligence agents, including veterans. So after the conflicts are long over.
And Jordan, I think it's enforcement by intimidation. I mean, can you imagine a U.S. service member having to go through the rigmarole to check and see if a place that he or she wants to travel might carry this risk? And Jordan, I would just make two points based on that last caller. First of all, I think these countries that have made a calculation that they will never be a target of the ICC because they have these processes in place, and so they think it's okay to sign. Jordan, that is a very risky move for them to take, and I would suggest that they need to take another look at it, because if we've seen in international tribunals really all over the world, they're always looking to expand their jurisdiction, and you never know who's going to end up being a target. The second thing, Jordan, the caller asked if we have allies. I've got to tell you, we have become very accustomed to, in these international tribunals, most often at the UN, but it's no surprise at the ICC either, at being a very lonely minority. That's okay, Jordan. Sometimes you have to stand on truth and you have to stand on justice, even if you're the only one or in a very small amount of company making those arguments.
Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Mary in Maryland on line three. Mary, welcome to JCEO Live.
Thank you very much. My question is, I don't understand how American law professors can be allowed to speak against our soldiers.
Oh, because they're not, they would say, well, I'm not speaking against U.S. soldiers. I'm speaking for a jurisdiction of a court. You know, if our soldiers did nothing wrong, then they should have nothing to fear in this prosecution. These are American law professors who believe in this idea of world courts to enforce human rights law. And the idea of the ICC sprung out of the need for sometimes having those special tribunals, like Nuremberg for the Nazis, like the special tribunal for the war crimes in Yugoslavia and Slobodan Milosevic and those activities. And by the way, his case, he died in prison before the case was ever even finalized. And ultimately, the evidence came to light that even though he was not a nice guy, he had nothing to do with the atrocities that he was being charged with. But he died in prison in The Hague. But that was under a special tribunal that was created to investigate crimes against humanity and war crimes. So there was this idea that, hey, instead of having to create these special tribunals for like those horrendous situations in Darfur or in Rwanda, when you had, the genocides there, let's have a permanent body to do this. The danger in having a permanent body to do this is that if the permanent body doesn't abide by its own restrictions, as Mark said, and Than, I just want to underscore, it's supposed to be very limited in jurisdiction. You're supposed to really only, if you're the ICC, be able to investigate members and actors within countries, militaries, intelligence agencies, for these specific horrendous acts, which, again, the prosecutor is alleging that there are war crimes to investigate here of the U.S. military. War crimes like torture, crimes against humanity, serious offensives. That if they were convicted, that's life, and they don't have the death penalty anymore at the ICC. It'd be life in prison at the Hague, in the prison that they operate. But then the idea was that you don't do that with countries that have real court systems, even if you don't always agree with their court systems. But if they have real court systems where there's real due process, then you don't mess with those countries. You're worried about the countries where victims would have no effective place to be heard, and the aggressors would never be brought to justice. And that's, again, would take out a lot of the major powers in the world. But the ICC has said this is not enough. We don't have enough work to do. Like I said, they've only done 8 cases that have gotten to their Supreme Court. So they want to think about broadening out their jurisdictional abilities, their ability to reach into a country like the U.S. So in this sense, then, it's our brave men and women in the armed forces who are usually the ones standing up and defending us. Now it's our turn at the ACLJ and the ECLJ, and our members' turn to put their money where their mouth is, in the real, very real sense, by donating to the ACLJ right now, because the U.S. government can't go to this court and defend them. We are going to go to this court and defend them.
It was only supposed to apply to specific crimes in specific countries that had signed onto the statute. The United States has not done that, Jordan. But, Jordan, this is how it always goes. Eventually, these international tribunals always aim at the United States. And in this case, they're aiming at our service members. Look, I don't see there's much choice in this one, Jordan. This is something that every one of our members, really every American, should be standing up and joining us in mounting a defense.
Okay, this is the time, folks. We have a matching challenge. Put your money where your mouth is when you say you support our troops. Go to ACLJ.org right now and donate to our efforts at the International Criminal Court. My dad and I are arguing the case.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.